Perhaps it's not. Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps.
Hello, everyone. It's a new iteration of our theme music.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that's what, that's not what you all paid money for, to hear me sing. Wasn't that so beautiful? You're welcome.
They're logging into Patreon right now.
They're just like,
refund.
It's like, not only do I want a refund, I want to delete this account, and I never want to see the words Patreon again. I'm done with this whole platform, you say. No, okay, I promise I won't sing for the rest of the episode. I'll try my hardest. Because we have important work to do today, which is to talk about the Unsolved Mysteries reboot, Volume 2.
Volume 2. 6 more episodes to talk about. Gotta say... First,
nobody is very excited about them compared to the last episodes. I actually really like this first one, but...
Me too.
I can see that it's perhaps... It's no Belvedere Hotel. That was a real wild ride. So I can see that perhaps, you know, people are sort of like, oh, I see. It's not quite as enthralling.
Yeah, have you watched... So you obviously have watched the first two episodes. Have you watched any further?
Okay, so Netflix... I don't know what the fuck is up with Netflix lately, but when I go to watch a show, it's not playing me the first episode.
You know, I don't think you're the only one. There was some confusion about the order in which we're watching these episodes for the second half. I've seen some confusion about that.
It did it to me with the Lena Remini Scientology thing, too. Mac and I were like, oh, we should finally watch this. And we started watching it. And then we were like, is this the first episode? I'm so confused. And it's like, no, it wasn't. It was an episode from, like, season 3. And we had never watched it before. So we were like, okay. But when I sat down to watch volume 2 of this, it played me the Lady in the Lake one.
Which is the, like, the second to last one, I think.
Yeah. And I was like... Oh, the first episode. When I was trying to talk to people about the first episode, they were talking about something completely different. And I was super confused. And then I looked at my Netflix and I was like, oh, it just played me like a random ass episode because it's trying to fuck with me. I don't understand. I've been a Netflix customer since fucking 2004. And it's sometimes it's hard to worry about data mining because that bitch knows nothing about me. It knows nothing about me. Its recommendations are fucking off. I've given it so much data over the years. And it's like, do you want to watch Air Bud 2? No, I don't, bitch. I absolutely do not. And now it's like, oh, did you want to watch this random ass episode about Scientology? It's like, no, I kind of wanted to start at the beginning.
It's usually now, how people watch TV.
I have no idea who these people are. I know they're talking about Scientology. That's pretty much it. Yeah, we're not on good terms right now, me and Netflix. Am I gonna quit? Probably not. Though the price is going up. I think it's gonna be like $17 a month. It's going up.
Is it going up that much? I thought it was just going up a dollar. Unless maybe. It's already $16. But I honestly, Netflix is just one of those things you like have to have. So I don't know that I pay that close of attention. Although I did see that email where they told me the price was going up, and I was kind of like, bitch.
You're already so expensive and you give me so little. Honestly,
at least the only thing I can say about Netflix is that it's not like Hulu or Amazon where you like pay a certain amount to watch a show with a million ads, or you can pay more to watch the same show with no ads, which I just very it just upsets me on principle. It's like I'm already giving you money.
Fuck me with a chainsaw. It's really not appropriate. Hulu, no. Amazon. I'm sure they really care since they still have my money. What I've been watching a lot of lately is something called Tubi TV.
Oh, what's I've never heard of this.
It is a free thing that shows you somehow less ads than Hulu, but you don't have to pay for it.
Is there a good selection?
It has a ton of garbage. And the thing is that I was just saying, Netflix should know me so well. I watched like 2 movies on Tubi, and suddenly its recommendations for me are fucking amazing.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, do you want to watch this 70s movie about a secret society? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Like, the recommendations it's picking out for me are so obscure and so good. It has this feeling that I've been looking for of like looking for movies at the video store. And somehow Netflix doesn't have that. HBO doesn't have that. Where you're just like wandering around. You're like, oh, this looks kind of interesting. Maybe this. I'm getting that from something called fucking Tubi TV. But it shows minimal ads, and I've been watching all sorts of amazing crap on there, and I was like, how do you know me so well? I've never even logged in and made an account. I don't understand.
That's amazing.
They should probably move. I also think they have Australian MasterChef on there, Samantha.
Oh, I can't wait to tell Travis. He's going to be so excited.
Okay, please check that I'm correct about that before you tell him.
I won't get his hopes up.
Yeah, I might be wrong. But I thought they have a lot of cooking shows on there. And some of them are updated on a regular basis. And I thought I saw that on there.
You know what? Even if it doesn't have Australian MasterChef, if it just has some random ass cooking show, he watches all of them. So I'm sure he would find something that he would get sucked into.
I'm actually going to check right now because, yes, watch MasterChef Australia on Tubi.
Okay. He's going to be excited. The best. Tubi TV. I'm writing this down right now.
And then the questions are, is Tubi TV really free? Anyway. Yes, it is. And you can watch all sorts of bullshit VHS era movies, which is exactly what I want to watch.
Nice.
And Netflix has none of them for some reason, even though I'm sure they cost like 5 cents to get the rights to.
We are about to run out of episodes of Supermarket Sweep, the reboot of Supermarket Sweep, which has not disappointed. I fucking love every episode. I'm sad. We're going to get caught up pretty soon, and we're going to have to watch it on, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, actively on, because I don't watch regular TV, like, if the season's done yet, but
This is what I want you to do. I want you to put on, like, a negligee and some knee socks and be like, Travis, I have a surprise for you. And then it turns out that you've covered the TV in, like, a sheet or a blanket, and then you pull off. He thinks it's going to be something sexy, but then you pull off the sheet. And you are playing Australian MasterChef.
See, this is, he could do the same thing to me if he somehow found episodes of Canada's Worst Handyman. It'd be the same thing.
Exactly. He gets down on one knee. He's like, Samantha, even though we're already married, I have something to ask you. And you're like, oh my God, what? And it's like, he's holding his phone. Will you watch more Canada's Worst Handyman with me?
So romantic.
You're like, one tear. Yes, Travis, I will.
But what's funny is we were just talking about Canada's Worst Handyman last night because we were talking about how sad we're going to be when we run out of episodes of Supermarket Sweep. And he was like, do they still have Canada's Worst Handyman on Netflix? We could rewatch them, which, like, fall in love all over again. I don't think they do because I think I'm the only person in the world that liked that show.
No, Max did too.
Okay, there are two people in the world that like that show.
Cost 5 cents. Like, what is,
I think so. They just
licensing rights for Canada's Worst Handyman. Netflix couldn't cough that up. They're paying like $1 million to try to get friends.
I know.
Whatever. Yeah. You're like, the show I watch is basically free. Just get it.
I think that show probably costs $5 to make. They just use an old building that's gonna get torn down anyway.
Yeah, they just get a bunch of people that don't know how to use tools and a camera crew. It can't be that expensive.
It really can't.
I don't know how to use tools. I'm right here. Okay. You can tell we haven't talked in a while because this is nice.
We're just
blabbering.
I'm sure the listeners are really enjoying us not talking about Unsolved Mysteries.
We're like, you know what sucks? Netflix that brought us Unsolved Mysteries. Which... yeah, okay. I guess I could go on and on about that, but let's get into the mysteries, I suppose. I actually do like this first one.
The first one's pretty good.
What is this called? This first one, do you remember?
It's called Washington Insider Murder.
Oh, okay.
So or death? I'm not really sure, because there's some question as to whether or not he was murdered, I guess, but I don't know. That's about what it's called.
No, there's not. Says
well.
Says me, the expert. Okay. So this opens on the Cherry Island landfill, which is in Wilmington, Delaware. On December 31st, 2010, a body was found in the landfill. It was an older white male with no obvious injuries. There was a major clue to the body's identity, which was that he was still wearing his West Point graduate ring, which showed he was from the class of 66. So this turned out to be John Wheeler, who was a former George H. Bush aide. He was also the executive director of the Vietnam War Memorial. And we hear from some people that, like, that project basically wouldn't have happened without him. I don't know if that's true, but if that's true, that's cool. He was known as a prominent advocate for veterans. He had graduated from West Point. He went to Harvard Business School. He went to Yale Law School. He had served in the Vietnam War. He also had bipolar disorder, which may or may not be a factor. That might be important information to know. So his wife, Catherine, of 13 years, he had two sons from a previous relationship, and his wife also has two kids. They describe him as being very smart. He was known as being, like, extremely passionate, and once he was, like, on a cause, like, something for veterans or whatever, like, he wouldn't let go, right? Like, he was very determined person. And from hearing from his family, you can tell they clearly cared about him a lot. I don't know that I would have gotten along with John Wheeler, but you can sort of respect him as, like, a passionate individual, I guess.
Sure. People described him as a nice guy, you know, in generally speaking.
Yeah. So the fact that he worked for George H. Bush, maybe we can put that aside.
If you weren't talking about that, if you were talking about, like, donuts or something, you'd probably find maybe some camaraderie.
Talk about the importance of the war memorial. I don't know. At the time of his death, he had been working as a consultant for the defense contracting firm MITRE, which specializes in stuff like artificial intelligence and satellites, and I don't know, sounds kind of sketchy and evil. He at the time he was working on cybersecurity, such as foreign government interference. Okay. They looked for other evidence in the landfill, but guess what? Landfill's full of trash. They couldn't really find anything. Okay. I personally think he was murdered. So let's just go with the, you know, the person who killed him. If the person that killed him left that ring on, that's sloppy.
That is a little sloppy.
Right? That's a distinctive thing. That's the only, that's like how they figured out who this was. Except that I think he also had his, still had his wallet. So whatever.
Also sloppy.
I don't know why they're acting like it was so hard to ID him if he had his wallet on him. Anyway, whatever. So, at the time his body was discovered, so the authorities in Wilmington, Delaware, call the authorities at his home, and the local police are actually on the way to his house to investigate a burglary. Because the neighbor, who was sort of a caretaker for the house, he wasn't there full time, you know, this is a well-to-do dude, had noticed that the upstairs window was open. So he went over to see if anything was amiss, and he noticed that some of the doors were open, things were tipped over, there were, like, broken dishes in the sink. There was a spilled white powder all over the floor, which they thought was the cleaner Comet.
But it had literal footprints in it, like a cartoon burglary.
Yeah, yeah. It also was, like, over his ceremonial West Point sword and shield, which for some reason were in the kitchen. That's really weird.
The whole scene is bizarre.
Yeah, it's quite strange. It looks like a crime scene, yeah, from, like, a cartoon. It's, like, too much evidence. It's kind of very strange. We also learned that a couple days previously, someone had set off a couple of smoke bombs at the construction site across the street. So, this house was by a kind of, like, famous park. And the people across the street were building this big house on what John Wheeler considered to be, like, park land or public land. I don't know. He didn't think they should be able to build that house there. And they were, like, involved in this, like, legal battle and who knows what all. But at that construction site, a couple of smoke bombs had gone off. And when the police went to investigate that, they found a cell phone. And that cell phone turned out to be John Wheeler's. So how is that connected to his death? Is that connected to the break-in at the house?
Did he set off those smoke bombs because of this dispute? Which I don't even know what the goal of that would be.
Yeah, the idea. Okay, one theory put forth is that, so he's involved with this dispute. He thinks it's, like, super immoral to build this house. I kind of wonder if it's just wrecking his view of the water, and that's why he's actually pissed.
I mean, could be.
But who knows? So he's pissed this house is going off. So there's this theory that he went and set off these smoke bombs and ended up dropping his phone, but it's like, for what?
What would that do? It's not like he was spray painting the place. It's just smoke bombs. There's just smoke. It's not damaging. It's not gonna, like, halt the construction because of a smoke bomb, right? Unless I don't know anything about, unless what my understanding of a smoke bomb is different. I don't know what that's gonna accomplish.
It just releases smoke.
Yeah, so I don't get it.
My theory would more be that was to, like, lure John Wheeler out of his house.
Yeah, that, yeah, maybe.
But we don't know that that's true. Okay, so the FBI is called in to investigate due to Wheeler's connection to the Pentagon and past presidents. So they try to make a timeline of what he's doing prior to his death. His family last saw him a couple days earlier to celebrate Christmas. After Christmas, he said he had to go back to D.C., and his wife was annoyed because they had plans to, like, see a movie and hang out and do family shit. But on December 28th, he goes back to D.C. He just works for that day, and then he goes back to that home, which is in Newcastle, Delaware. So that's not where his family was. His family was in New York.
This is so much commuting for so little work. Was my only thought at this point in the episode. I'm like, God damn, that is so much
for one day.
I guess I'm just spoiled from working from home now and having like a 30 second commute, but I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. Is that worth it?
Do you don't want to go from New York to DC to Delaware?
No.
Maybe that's just East Coast life. I wouldn't know.
I guess I wouldn't either, but.
So he goes to this house. He's there by himself. That night, there's the smoke bomb incident across the street. The next day, his wife is unable to reach him by phone, which is unusual. He was on his phone all the time. He contacted his employer, MITRE, to say there was a break-in at the house, and he was now missing things connected to their business, which is why he was telling them, such as like his key fob to enter the building, his briefcase, and his cell phone. Which is, I guess, why he can't contact his wife can't contact him. But strangely, he doesn't tell the police or tell his wife. Now, it seems like maybe he's not really that worried about the break-in beyond the fact that it's a security breach for MITRE. Why he doesn't tell his wife about it at all?
Yeah, that's weird.
So after he loses his cell phone, it's harder to track his movements, obviously. There's security footage of him at a pharmacy the following day. Talking to people at the pharmacy, they find out that he was apparently looking for a ride to Wilmington, and it is believed he was trying to get his car. I mean, that's actually pretty confirmed. So he had left his car in Wilmington before Christmas and then taken the train to New York and then the train to DC and the train to Delaware. So he needs to get back to his car in Wilmington, which is like close to where he is, but he still needs a ride. So he's just like at the pharmacy asking strangers for rides. Kind of odd. So he gets a ride around 6 p.m. He's then seen again at 6:42, where he shows up at the wrong parking garage. And apparently, like me, this man had a terrible sense of direction. And so he was constantly losing his car. He was known for, like, taking a cab home when he'd actually driven to work because he couldn't fucking find his car.
I really can relate to this. I can never find my car in the IKEA parking lot, the Mall of America parking lot. I have to take my phone out and get a picture of whatever, you know.
I park in the same spot every time. That's
smart.
The only way.
Also smart.
That's the only way. That's the only way I can do it. Otherwise, I would be, because you wander in, you know how to get into the mall. It's huge, and then you go out and you go, huh?
Where did I put my car?
Yeah,
yeah.
So, this was a notorious problem for him, and kind of compounding that problem is that he had his briefcase stolen and his parking slip that would have told him, you know, where his car is, was in the briefcase. So he doesn't have that anymore, and he's actually at the wrong parking garage. And we hear from a parking garage attendant who's like, he's clearly kind of irate or out of it or something in the security footage. He's like holding a shoe.
He's hobbling. Got one bare foot.
Yeah, so it's not really clear like what happened to him in between the pharmacy and him showing up at this garage, if something happened to him. This is where him having bipolar disorder comes into play. Like, he was on medication for it. He apparently had it very well managed, but, you know, it's kind of an unpredictable ailment. So maybe that was part of the issue. The parking attendant says that he was just like, look, my briefcase was stolen. I don't have my slip. And she was like, where is it? And he just kept going, it was stolen. It was stolen. And she's kind of like, I don't know how to help you with that. Like,
right.
I don't know where your car is, dude. And he's not even at the right garage, as it turns out. So she really can't help him. Yeah, he does seem like super agitated. So it's possible this is like a manic episode from his illness, or it's possible that something happened in those 40 minutes. Was he attacked? Did something scare him? You know, is he acting paranoid for good reason? He does end up dead. So
right.
It's perhaps not irrational. The next time he is seen on camera is 20 hours later in the basement of an office building where he seems to have spent the night. It's kind of hard to track his movements because the basement has a lot of access points. You can, like, enter this building from a lot of other buildings. It seems like there's sort of underground entrances, so you wouldn't have to go out in the cold. There's also a gym down there. There's, like, employee lockers. But he doesn't have any connection to that building. So it's a little bit strange that he was there. I mean, I guess he just knew that was a place he could go. But right. Was he hiding from someone? What was he doing during that time other than, like, sleeping, presumably? He exits the building at 8:30 p.m. wearing a dark hoodie, which is not his usual clothes. And he does pull the hood up, so it kind of seems like he's trying to hide, maybe from the camera, maybe from someone outside. The last time he's seen on a security camera is him walking down the street right after leaving that building. Okay, that's kind of what we know. The investigators don't have a crime scene to work with. The trash that was by his body was from the city of Newark. And kind of amazingly to me, they were able to narrow down to a couple of dumpsters that his body probably came from, and then went to those dumpsters and, like, swabbed them, and they got a partial DNA match from one of the dumpsters.
That was wild to me. The fact that they could take just trash that was around his body and narrow down. Because,
This is, I know Newark trash. This is Newark trash if I ever saw it. This Coke bottle, Newark.
The reason it's wild, too, is because they say there was no reason for him to even be in Newark. So the fact that suddenly this whole new town comes into play is, like, it just deepens the mystery. But it's also kind of remarkable that they were able to figure that out.
This man is going to every other place on the East Coast, but he ends up in Newark, and people are like, Newark? He would never go there. He hated Newark. I don't. He just didn't have a reason to be there.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing some of the trash, I don't know if it had addresses on it or what, but they were able to say came from Newark, and then if it came from Newark, then it would have come from these dumpsters. And then they do find a partial DNA match to one of the dumpsters. So there's for a while this idea that maybe he crawled into one of the dumpsters to sleep. Please.
No. I hate this theory. Me and Travis were immediately like, what? No.
No. This is a professional man who fucking has, like, two residences, right? Like, he's not crawling into a dumpster to sleep.
No, he's going to go into another pharmacy and ask for someone to call the cab. I don't care. They bring in the bipolar thing as if that is somehow an explanation. Like, maybe he's having a mental break, and so he climbs into a dumpster. I think his family would know if this is behavior he's shown in the past, and they're like, no, it makes no sense. He would never do that.
I think that that is an explanation they could have used if this was not such a prominent person, and maybe it would be harder to argue against. If I am found in a landfill, maybe you'll be able to say, Liz probably crawled into a dumpster to keep warm. But there's no reason. I realize this guy doesn't have his stuff, and he's, like, disoriented and irritated. If things are really getting this bad, he can fucking go to the police.
Yeah.
He can be like, I actually have connections at the fucking Pentagon, right? There's no reason he has to sleep in a dumpster.
No.
He could get someone to contact his wife.
And it's not like Newark is bumfuck nowhere where the police, you know, clock out at 6 p.m. and good luck to you. Like...
It does seem like, okay, I will buy that maybe the bipolar thing is a factor only in that part where he's talking to the parking attendant. Is he acting kind of manically? Maybe. Bipolar doesn't explain you losing all sense of yourself and your
right.
No, that's not bipolar disorder. Suddenly thinking you have no resources and no connection, so you have to sleep in a dumpster. That's not bipolar disorder, says me, a mental health expert. But that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and the daughter, his stepdaughter, brings this up. Like, the autopsy report substantiates that, because if you are positing that he crawled into a dumpster and that he was killed when the dumpster was emptied into the garbage truck, the injuries to his body, which were extremely severe, do not back that up. So right. there's really no evidence that that is how he died.
Right. No. I think that that might be like an easy answer to like quit looking into this. And maybe there are some powerful people that don't really want people looking into this. And they're like, yeah, he just slept in a dumpster. Just leave it at that. But I don't think it actually makes any sense.
No.
So let's see. When he's last seen on that video walking down the street, he's actually also going in the opposite direction of Newark. But it is possible that he got in a cab and went from there. But the autopsy, as Samantha was alluding to, shows that he's been beaten. He has a punctured lung. He has broken ribs. He has numerous facial bruises. None of that is he was dumped out of a dumpster into a garbage truck.
No, and also the garbage man that they interview doesn't really want to come out and say that sometimes people who are sleeping in these dumpsters end up getting tossed into the garbage truck because he...
I know.
But he basically says that because he says that sometimes, especially when it's cold, I will pull up to a dumpster, I'll put my tongs into whatever it's called, into the dumpster to lift it, and people will start screaming and jump out. And he goes, sometimes you hear it and sometimes you don't. And what's implied there is that sometimes when you don't, they get tossed into the back of your garbage truck, right? And those people presumably haven't all died every time.
I feel bad for this dude because I feel like people are a little bit blaming him. Like, oh, that guy was asleep in the dumpster and they got tossed in the trash and that's how he died. Well, that would mean, you know, not intentionally, but indirectly, that guy was responsible for his death. And I don't think that's true. I think he was beaten to death.
Yeah. And the autopsy pretty much backs that up.
Yeah. So now Unsolved Mysteries wants to talk about the smoke bombs and the land dispute. And how passionate he was on this issue. And did he... There's also this theory that maybe there wasn't a break-in and he trashed his own house because he was so mad he lost his cell phone. And I was like, that makes no sense. What happened to his briefcase and key fob?
Yeah, I want to know where that briefcase is.
Which apparently was full of all these, you know, super important, high clearance, whatever, security documents that people, I'm sure, would have wanted to get their hands on. So there's this really... ridiculous theory that he sets off the smoke bombs in the house. Again, why? Because he's a child, I guess. He loses his phone. He gets back to his house. He realizes he's lost his phone and he's so mad that he trashes his own house.
Why wouldn't he just walk back across the street and look for it?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, then what happened to his briefcase and his key fob? You think that guy wanted to call this, like, defense contractor company and tell them he had lost that shit? No. Right? Obviously, they're going to be furious. That's like a huge security problem. So that doesn't make any sense. And I was annoyed they even like brought that up. I think someone wanted something that he had. Right?
Yeah.
Someone wanted to steal that briefcase and someone wanted to, you know, get him out of the picture.
Yeah. Otherwise, where is the briefcase? If there's no foul play here... They searched through the trash that was around him. They would have found it if it was with him. He's not seen with the briefcase on the security footage. So what happened to it?
I mean, I guess we only have Mitre's word that he called and told them that that stuff was stolen, except that he tells the same thing to the parking attendant.
And you don't, he's on several videos and you don't see it.
And he doesn't have it. So yeah, if he just is a guy who occasionally likes to sleep in a dumpster, then where the fuck is his briefcase and where's his key fob?
Yeah.
And why is he wandering around yelling at parking attendants
with one shoe?
Yeah. Okay, so money, maybe his ID wasn't found on his body, but money was still on his body. A Rolex was on him as well as his West Point ring, so that definitely rules out a mugging. I mean, that would have to be the worst mugging that ever happened.
Bad at mugging.
Yeah. A reward was offered for information, but no one ever came forward. That's pretty much it. It is very mysterious. And I think there are definitely people that don't want this looked into. Someone wanted that information, I think. Yeah. They trashed the house. They got the briefcase. And maybe they needed to get rid of him, too. Maybe he knew something.
It seems like it.
Really,
this guy was too high profile for him to have just crawled into a dumpster and like, no, someone wanted this guy gone.
Yeah, It doesn't make any sense, because then the other stuff wouldn't have happened.
Right.
If he just loved dumpster sleeping. This guy that was living a very posh life.
With two houses, one of which is, like, historic.
Yeah, it's, like, on the water of this, like, grand park and shit. Plus, he's got this, you know, I assume pretty nice place in New York where his family is. Like, whatever. This guy can, like, call former presidents on the phone. He's not sleeping in a dumpster.
No.
So that's very obnoxious to me. But I think they just sort of, I think they don't want to go like, well, either the government or some other important person was like, this guy's got to go. Unless it's about this house thing, but I don't think so because of the briefcase.
No, I don't think so. Also, so it seems like he was losing because the house was being built. So I don't think there was no motive to kill him.
Right. They were still going to get their house.
Yeah.
They were just going to have the most awkward, like, neighbor of all time.
Which that's just going to happen no matter what. So that's not a reason to murder.
I do wonder why he didn't contact his wife.
Yeah, that's weird.
During that stretch of time. And it also seems like, I realize he didn't, he had money. Like, he could have gone to a hotel, you would think.
Yeah.
He thought someone was after him.
Or he could have just got a cab home, like he had done in the past when he couldn't find his car.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's odd. It does make me think that he was maybe trying to lay low for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
And him putting on that hoodie.
Yeah, they said that it was really unusual for him to even ever wear a hoodie. He was not a hoodie-wearing guy.
Yeah, he seems like a, you know, boring, professional businessman type. He's not wearing a hooded sweatshirt.
No. Super weird. A lot of mystery in this one.
He's too busy talking to George Bush on the phone to be buying hooded sweatshirts. So odd. I sort of feel like they don't want this one solved, honestly.
Yeah, I think.
And by they, I mean the octopus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch out. The octopus is coming to get you.
All right.
Samantha's turn.
I'm covering episode 2, which is A Death in Oslo. This one, I will say, and just right off the bat, I don't have as many notes about this as I normally would. I don't think there's a ton to this mystery.
No.
But at the same time, I sort of think I've solved it.
Whoa.
Okay, I think anyone who's watched this has probably solved it. But we'll get there.
Samantha's like, I've made a citizen's arrest. The murderer is in my basement right now. I'm unveiling it today on the show. That would be so cool.
That would be amazing. No, that's it. I have not.
No.
But I also kind of feel like I know what happened. But anyway, we'll get there. So this is the mystery of a woman who was found dead in an Oslo, Norway hotel in 1995. So we start with a man named Lars Christian Wegner, who is a journalist and who features a lot in this episode. Lars tells us that the only thing we know for sure...
This episode only exists because of Lars. Like, Lars can't let this go. And so he just keeps investigating, even though everybody else has moved on.
That's true. It's
power
true.
To Lars.
Lars is the hero of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can all relate a little bit to Lars. So he tells us that the only thing we know for sure about the woman who died in Oslo on that Wednesday evening, May 31st, 1995, is that she checked into the Plaza Hotel, which at the time was the nicest hotel in Oslo, Norway.
It seems super posh.
It was super posh. So 3 days into her stay, one of the cashiers realized that she had not given a credit card for the room when she checked in. And there had also been a do not disturb sign on the door for the entire time of her stay. They were apparently a little squeaked out by this, so they sent a security guard up to the room to knock on the door. However, the moment he knocked, a gunshot rang out, which obviously startled him. The security guard kind of ran off. He waited for a bit, but he left, leaving the room unguarded for a period of about 15 minutes.
That's above his pay grade.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I'm out. This isn't the United States where you hear gunshots and you go, this is Oslo.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, what's happening right now?
He, like, answers noise complaints, right? Like, he doesn't respond to shootings. So he went and got his supervisor. When they returned, they found that the door was double locked from the inside. So they had to manually override the locks to get in. Inside, a woman with short black hair lay dead on the bed. There was an acrid smell in the room. They immediately peaced out and called the police.
Yeah, of course. Good for them.
So I'm going to pronounce this man's name wrong. It's Adun Christensen is the prosecuting authority for the Oslo Police Department. I'm not really sure what that means. I don't know anything about the police in Norway, but that's what his like title card read. He was there. He was on the scene, and he appears in this episode. He describes the woman having the gun still in her hand. They found no trace of other people having been in the room with her, and they didn't see any sign of a struggle. It looked as though she had, according to him, looked as though she had been living there alone. The lock on the hotel door recorded all comings into the room, and there weren't very many. There was also no immediate entering of the room around the time of her death. So the police documents conclude that it was a suicide with 99% certainty. However, as they were looking into it further, they found some strange things, including that nothing in the room would indicate the woman's identity. She left no ID. There was no credit card. There wasn't even a wallet. She had no keys with her, no passport, which is weird because you'd need a passport to get into the country. Nothing. Additionally, the woman had no toiletries with her. She didn't even have a toothbrush.
Also, I just feel like European hotels are secure in a way that American hotels are not, where you're expected to show your passport when you check in. So that would be weird that she didn't have that with her to, like,
yes,
show her identity.
Well, and especially because she, like, was in the nicest hotel in Oslo, and she was in a very nice room. So it's puzzling how the woman managed to get a room in the first place, let alone such a nice room, because hotel procedure was that she had to show an ID and provide a credit card, neither of which she did. So that's super strange. Stranger still is that all of the tags and labels from her clothing had been cut off.
That is such a great... strange detail.
Such a great detail, right? It was also odd that she carried with her only sweaters, tops, and a trench coat. She didn't have any additional clothes for her lower body. She just wore a skirt and like some hosiery. Otherwise, she...
I can explain this. This is known as Porky Pigging It, where you're only wearing a shirt and no pants. It's extremely unsettling on men.
Yes.
But... she was into it.
I guess she was, but it was chilly. It was March, which is not a warm time of year in Norway. And so the fact that she had sweaters and tops and a trench coat for her upper body, but then only a short skirt. And I mean, I guess they're like, well, she didn't really leave her room much. So maybe she wasn't that concerned about being cold. It's just a weird detail. It doesn't make a ton of sense.
I like that you just accepted. You're like, yes, she was into Porky Pigging It. However, it was chilly.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm going to take into consideration. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, it might be sexy to wear, like, a sweater and a short skirt, but if it's going to be fucking cold, I'm putting on pants.
Yeah, no way.
So the information she provided about herself on the registration card for the hotel lists her name as Jennifer Fairgate, and she lists her date of birth as August 28th. 1973. She provided a phone number and address. However, the address, the actual address, which was in a tiny village in Belgium, did not exist. Further, the woman herself, Jennifer Fairgate, there was no trace of her could be found. She apparently, that woman did not exist, so it was probably a false name.
We get to see Lars go to this little town in Belgium. Looks so cute.
It does look like a sweet, quaint little town.
I wish I could go investigate something there and then eat a lot of cheese.
I want Unsolved Mysteries to just fill time in the episode so they send me to Belgium to walk around and accomplish absolutely nothing.
And be like, this is where the road ends. Therefore, the address does not exist.
Yeah. Really unnecessary. You could have looked it up on Google Maps. But, you know, they had some time to fill. They needed to fill an hour.
I wanted to see this little town. Thank you, Lars, for going to Belgium.
It was really cute. So investigators only found fingerprints belonging to the dead woman inside the room. The fingerprints had no matches in the Interpol database. At this point, there were enough fishy aspects to the case to make police wonder if there was more going on than just a suicide. So they did kind of investigate further. To their credit, they didn't completely write it off. A few days before her arrival, the woman called the hotel and informed that them that she would be traveling with a man named Louis Farragate. His name was also on the registration card, and the concierge does remember a man standing beside the woman when she checked in, but after that, he completely disappears.
Okay, this is confusing to me, because if they know who checked her into the hotel, shouldn't they know why she didn't have to show ID and stuff?
I was confused by this, too, because I don't understand why they didn't just ask the concierge, why did you check her in without a credit card, and then provide whatever that answer was in the episode?
Yeah.
Was it just, oh, I forgot? Like, was it a coincidence, or...
I thought at first that they didn't know who checked her in.
No, they did. Like, yeah, they were aware.
They did. Yeah. So why can't they just fucking ask that person why she didn't show ID, or how she was able to get this nice room without a credit card, or... whatever, like, you should have some answers to these questions.
I have no idea, and it is not provided in the episode, and I don't know if it's a really boring, mundane answer, like, oh, I forgot, oh, I'm a teenager, and I don't give a shit about my job. Like, I don't know if that's the real reason that Unsolved Mysteries left it out for mystery's sake, but...
They're like, I come to work high, you're lucky this place doesn't burn down.
I mean, that might be the real reason, or maybe they were intimidated because these two were secret spies and they were paid a large sum of money to not, you know what I mean? Like, it could be that. I don't know. So there's no evidence of this Louis Farragate other than his name on the registration card. The hotel did have cameras, but it doesn't appear that the police ever looked through them, and that footage has since been lost. So we have no idea if
the man went
to the room with her or not, or what.
It's very weird that they, in some ways, seem to be taking this investigation seriously, but then just, like, didn't look at the security footage from the lobby.
Yes.
Like, why?
It's weird.
How long could that have possibly taken to do?
And also, at least one of the police officers who was there and investigating is interviewed for Unsolved Mysteries, so no one was like, hey, why didn't you look at the cameras? Don't know.
I thought it was going to be like, look, it was the 90s, it was Oslo, we didn't have cameras, and I would have been like, okay. But they did, and they just like, well, we don't need that evidence.
Oh, they absolutely had cameras.
That evidence was in another room. I have to get up. No thanks. I'm gonna sit here and eat herring.
Yeah, or maybe they were like pretty convinced it was a suicide, and I don't know.
Check.
Yeah, you
what
should.
What if someone like ran out right after the shot? Wouldn't you want to know that?
I would think you would.
Okay, Oslo, let me on your police force. I'm ready.
I'll just ask a few more questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe the problem is these people are too polite.
Maybe. I don't know.
They didn't go to the concierge. Why didn't you fucking do your job?
We can fill that need in your police force.
Yeah. They need someone just going to be like, look, level with me. Were you bribed? Just tell me.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So according to Unsolved Mysteries, for a few weeks, the police did pursue the case as a potential homicide, but that didn't really go anywhere because there was really no evidence.
They didn't even bother to look at the security footage. There was no evidence because they didn't do anything.
Yeah. It seems like they were like, oh, no other fingerprints. Case closed. I don't know. It's weird. So in 1996, which was about a year later, Oslo police closed the case and buried the body of the still unidentified woman. In 1996, in the same year, Lars, the reporter, got involved. He was saddened by the case and wrote an article about the woman in hopes that someone might recognize her and come forward, but no one ever did. For the next 20 years, Lars would pull out his notes from time to time, hoping to see something new or find something that could be useful. Sometimes he would run an anniversary story about it. Maybe someone will recognize her now, but it's just never come to pass. I really respect Lars's dedication.
I know. And that burial for her seemed really nice.
Yeah, they actually did a little burial. I mean, Lars said it wasn't a funeral, but it was more than she would have gotten in the United States. Like, they had her, like, lie in a chapel in, a little coffin for a little while, and then, they walked her out. So
there were pallbearers.
It wasn't nothing.
Lars seems very upset that she doesn't have a headstone because they don't have a name for her, and I think that's admirable, but also they didn't just, like, throw her in a ditch with a bunch of other people.
Right.
She has a grave.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is where they take the little side quest and go to Belgium. Lars meets up with like a journalist who lives in Belgium who translates, and they kind of go they walk around and talk to people who have lived there their whole lives and show the photo. No one recognizes the woman.
European and so amazing.
It really is.
Total side note that at some point Lars is like, someone had, you know, I'm going to find the person that knows this woman. She had family. She had friends. She had schoolmates. She had boyfriends. She had lovers. And I was like, I just love that this guy thinks of boyfriends and lovers separately.
Two different categories. It is very European. I mean,
yeah. That is. Are those two different things? Sure. But I don't feel like an American show would have listed that as two separate categories of people. So I just really appreciated the intense Europeanness of like, we'll find her boyfriends and also her lovers.
It is pretty amazing. So honestly, I felt, other than how like quaint and charming it is, the whole side quest to Belgium was kind of boring.
It's just stalling. It's just killing time.
It's kind of just padding the episode. So we do learn a few more things after the trip to Belgium. The woman had with her a bunch of bullets, which is odd because if she was intending to kill herself, some guy points out you only need one bullet to kill yourself. So why does she have like a whole suitcase full?
Maybe two if you're a bad shot, but
yeah, not really necessary.
They came by the suitcase full. She went to the bullet store. She said, I need bullets. And they're like, oh, we have a special today. Buy one.
She couldn't pass up a good deal.
25 free. Yeah. That's how bullets are sold, I assume.
So additionally, she had a very unusual grip on the gun, which was basically backwards with her thumb on the trigger, which is a strange way to hold a gun, but it's not like an impossible way to do it. I mean, I don't know why you would, but
I don't buy that at all. That to me is the most fishy thing.
It is odd. It's almost as if, yeah, maybe her hand was placed there after she was dead. Dude thinks that the gun she had was overpowered for something a woman would carry around with her. I don't know. I don't know anything about guns, but this seems to be based solely on the fact that she was a slight woman, and why would a little lady be carrying around a big gun? I don't know. It's still a handgun, whatever. I don't know what this, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. Then we have a weird reenactment where Lars and some experts converge on the hotel room in an attempt to recreate the scene with a similar sized model. They imagine a scene in which the murderer like climbs on top of the dead woman, and this dude climbs on top of the model, which is super weird. And I don't know, they don't offer any evidence like the trajectory of the bullet. Like, why couldn't he just be standing next to her? Why couldn't he be standing over her? Like, why is he climbing on top of her? It's very strange.
Because it's sexier,
I guess. It's the reenactment is not sexy, but I no. But yeah, I guess I don't really understand why they think it would have gone down. He's that like, way, but I guess now, it's dramatic for
straddle
TV
her. Yeah, don't know,
it's weird, and I kind of feel bad for that model. It seemed awkward. Lars next explains to us that the police looked at the timestamps on the key card and surmised that because there were not that many timestamps, that she spent most of her time in the hotel room preparing for her suicide. However, when you take a closer look and you also combine the timestamps with eyewitness reports, it paints a very different picture. So here's what happened. On Wednesday evening around 10:45 p.m., she entered the room. There was another entrance at 12:21 a.m. and then the next morning at 8:34 and then 8:50. There was another entrance into the room at 11:03 a.m. And then at 1 o'clock on Thursday, the hotel cleaning staff entered to clean the room, which was empty. We don't have another timestamp entering the room until Friday at 8 a.m. When it's used again, which means that she was out of her room for 20 hours.
Yeah, that's kind of a really long time.
It is a really long time. Like, where was she? She had to have stayed somewhere overnight.
To act like she was in her room most of the time, except that she was once gone for 20 hours, is kind of...
That's very different. It's very different. So this, again, begs the question, who was this woman? They proposed that she could have been a top dollar sex worker. They proposed that she could have been a spy or an assassin. Lars points out...
Assassin.
I like assassin, but I kind of think spy. I don't know. Clearly, it's actually, one of the two.
I actually do think it's spy, but
yeah.
At first, I was thinking sex worker. It would have explained the no pants thing. It would have explained maybe why she didn't have ID on her. But when you get to stuff like the clothing labels and the fact that, to me, it really seems like someone put a gun in her hand.
A suitcase full of bullets. Yeah.
No one has ever reported her missing.
Right. So Lars points out that the Plaza Hotel was a high-profile place. Secret talks had taken place recently between Israel and Palestine. They surmised that she could have been some sort of, I don't know,
government official
or something like that. A former member of the Norwegian intelligence services is interviewed, and it is his opinion that she was executed. He says that the serial number on the gun was completely removed, and while some, you'll find that like stolen guns will have the serial number scratched off, it rarely goes deep enough because most people don't realize that the serial number is like really in there. And he says the fact that the serial number was completely removed as deep as it needed to go is evidence that, you know, someone knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
He says that the removal of the tags on the clothes is typical of people in the intelligence agencies. The missing time from the hotel, the 20 hours, would also be consistent with her having a second place to go, which is pretty much standard procedure, especially if you think you might be being followed or something. He says that the locked door, the door being double locked from the inside, means nothing. He basically laughs and says there's no closed door for intelligence, which I think is totally true.
It's also very creepy.
Yes. The fact that no family ever came forward or files a missing persons report is not surprising to him. He says that in these situations, families will be taken care of monetarily for the rest of their lives in exchange for their silence. So that's not surprising to him at all. Finally, the last part of this episode talks about DNA, because I think that's the first thing I thought of was, is there DNA? And there is. So unfortunately, blood samples and all evidence from the case had been long destroyed. But in 2016, the body was exhumed. The body was surprisingly intact for the time that had passed, and they were able to get a full DNA profile. Analysis from the DNA revealed that she was likely of European heritage, probably from Eastern Germany. Unfortunately, there was no matching DNA profiles in any available databases. But they were also able to do an analysis of the enamel of her teeth to determine that she was older than the age she gave when she registered for the hotel. She was probably 24 at the time of her death. So they are hoping that this new information might bring someone forward who maybe knows who she was. I sort of think they should do like ancestry analysis of her DNA or the whatever that's called. I don't know if that's been done or not. But to maybe find someone who maybe is a distant relative or something, but
familial match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Familial DNA. That's what I was thinking. I don't know if they're doing that or thinking about doing that, but they have a full DNA profile. But that's sort of where the episode ends. There's not much known, about her at all.
I feel like there is some government official that is so annoyed with Lars, because otherwise this would have been dropped so long ago.
Absolutely.
But like every 5 years he's publishing an article like, oh, we still don't know what happened to this mysterious woman. And someone else is going, oh my God, shut up, Lars. This is supposed to be unsolved. No one is supposed to look into this death. It's going to cause this like government scandal or, you know, whatever. Who knows?
And I don't think anyone would have looked into it. It's really just Lars.
I think Lars has a bit of a crush on this mystery woman. There is something about this case that is like...
There's intrigue.
Yeah, it's something more from a movie than you would expect to encounter in real life.
Well, this woman looks like a spy. She has she's Eastern European. She has this short black hair, kind of a mysterious look to her.
They said she had sort of like chic, nice clothes, but all the labels have been cut out. And she's staying at the super posh hotel, but no one knows like how she managed to get there. I am leaning towards spy.
I'm leaning towards spy too. And you know what? Something that I thought of, and I feel like someone in our Facebook group might have mentioned this. There have been other cases where people have shown up dead with all of the tags clipped from their clothes. There's a really famous one that was the mystery of the Somerton Man. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing because there's like podcasts about this. This is also known as and I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, but the Tamam Shud case. Okay. It's the mystery of an unidentified man who was found dead in December 1948 at the Somerton Park Beach, just south of Adelaide, South Australia. The name in the case is because of the Persian phrase tamam shud, which means ended or finished in Persian. Oh. And it was printed on a scrap of paper found months later in the pocket of the man's trousers. The scrap had been torn from the final page of a copy of, I'm not going to even try and pronounce this, it's a book that was authored by a 12th century poet. And this man had all of the tags clipped off of his clothes too, and it led to speculation that he was also a spy. So,
I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but some people are spies.
Yeah, right.
Spies do get eliminated. So it's not an impossible explanation.
Right. Someone's going to find their bodies.
Right.
So
also something about security knocks on the door and the bullet is immediate. Makes me think that's not suicide. And I can't really articulate why. But to me, she's not sitting there going to kill herself and then is waiting till someone knocks on the door.
That part is weird. It's also very cinematic. Like, the moment he knocks, a gunshot rings out. Ooh, that's scary.
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, that makes me think it's another person, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, there's a whole 15 minutes where someone could have left the room.
And then they never looked at the security footage, so someone could have exited the building right then. We wouldn't know.
Yep.
I'm guessing the police were sort of encouraged to not look into this too deeply because it seems like there's some pretty obvious loopholes in their investigation. And I think they either knew they shouldn't or were asked to kind of bury it.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for Lars, I don't think we would be talking about it now.
I agree.
This is something a little bit different because we get some European flavor. There's not a ton of information to go on, so it's not the most interesting story, but it is intriguing. I do kind of wonder if it needed to be a full, like, hour.
Yeah.
But it is still a good case.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I want to know what happened, but there's not as many twists and turns as you have in some of these other mysteries, but it was definitely something different, which I appreciate variety.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
There's that.
Should we rate these or anything?
We could, yeah. I really liked the first one.
Yeah.
I want to say that would be like a 4 out of 5 Robert Stacks for me, probably.
I agree. I feel like yours is more of a 3. It's intriguing, but there are parts where you're just like, okay, this doesn't add anything to the conversation.
No, the reenactment was weird, didn't need to be there. The side trip to Belgium was okay, but it was clearly done just to pad the episode. So
yeah, let's go talk to the mayor of this tiny town. I don't know, that it's kind of hilarious, but it's also kind of like super unnecessary.
Right.
I mean, I like Lars. I think maybe Lars should get his own show.
Yeah, where he just talks about mysteries.
Yeah, where he's just like, here's the things I haven't been able to let go. Lars's obsessions. Yeah. It was something a little different. And this first one, this Washington Insider one, it does have some twists, and it does have some sort of, particularly him spending all that time in that basement, so inexplicable.
Yeah.
Really hard to put your finger on, like, what?
What is he
doing? What exactly is happening there? Why couldn't he just... I mean, surely he knew people in the area. He could have gone and, like, stayed with them. They could have called his wife. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Even if he doesn't have a phone, like, you would think he would still be able to get a hold of people.
You would think he could walk into a store and ask them to call the police.
Yeah, and then explain to them, like, my phone and my wallet and my whatever was stolen and I need to get home. Like, they'll help you with that, right?
Right.
This is a powerful guy. I don't think he would have needed to be scared of the police in a way a normal person might be. It's intriguing. I don't have any answers. I do sort of blame the octopus. Whatever remnants of the octopus are out there. Yeah. Sorry, John Wheeler.
Yeah.
Ending up in a landfill. That is. Whew.
That sucks.
That's bad. That is bad. His family was, like, thankful he was even found so they could bury him. And I was like, oh, what a, like, tragic thing to be thankful for.
I know.
I'm so glad you found my dad in that landfill, because obviously he was never meant to be found. And then we never would have known what happened. And, ugh.
It's a bummer.
Awful. Yeah. Yep. But we will keep doing these reboot episodes for Patreon. We've got some, we do have a ghost mystery coming up.
Yeah. Have you watched that episode?
I have not.
It's pretty good.
Saving it. Yeah, it's pretty good. My mom really liked it. So she was telling me a little bit about it. So I'm looking forward to that. And that will also have some international flavor. So that's cool. And then, you know, sooner or later, we'll start season six. I know like 10 people are missing it. So
we'll probably get there before the end of the year. Right.
Yeah. We just need a little break, a little burned out by life.
Yeah.
But we will come back to you. I promise.
You promise.
I promise, dear listeners. Okay. All right. I think that wraps it up.
All right. Well, thanks for your money.
Yeah. Thanks for your money. We're actually just swimming around in it, Scrooge McDuck style. That's why we can't record more episodes. We're so busy counting your money. So thank you.
Thank you.
And farewell.
Bye.
Bye. Nice.